This is the Social Link Podcast, episode 27.
You win nothing!
On the home moment till now, break away. Ugh, let me out, can you let me out? Can you set me free from being stuck in the world? Save me the last bit in the soul.
How does it feel to be playing a game from last year?
Well, Alex, it feels good playing a game from last year, and I think it technically counts as two games from last year, right?
Yeah, right. That's right.
Yeah, both The Last of Us and Final Fantasy XIV.
Correction, it's technically Final Fantasy XIV, A Realm Reborn.
A Realm Reborn, okay.
Yeah, because, you know, because Final Fantasy XIV pertains to the game that was released in 2010.
And that's not a good thing.
No, it's not. So, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing really well. It's been a pretty exciting week.
Yeah, you've been releasing a shit ton of videos, like, this week.
Yeah, that, and then the new laptop and all that good stuff. What about you?
Let's see. Well, I am gonna basically come back to Final Fantasy tonight. I actually, like, let it lapse for a little bit so that it could just be, like, a little bit closer to, you know, to the 15th. Because I want to adjust the payment schedule for that. So I'm kind of letting it lapse just for a tiny bit. But I think what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna get, like, you know, a 60-day card and stuff and join you tonight if you're actually gonna play tonight.
Oh, I should play a little bit. It's a very, very interesting game.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's not talk about that yet, because, I mean, obviously, like, that's a pretty big deal, especially for a lot of people who've been listening, because they're like, oh my god, another fucking Final Fantasy talk. So, I mean, what else have you been up to? Because obviously, like, it's been like, you know, like, I just released the last week's episode instead of Saturday. That got released actually Wednesday. And, you know, like, and I haven't really heard from you at all this week, because you've been ridiculously busy.
Well, a lot of things have happened. I mean, I broadcasted a little bit on Twitch,
mm-hmm.
as you know, got OBS going.
Okay.
And OBS is pretty, pretty badass, I think. It's easy to use. Some people think it's hard, but it's not.
Mm-hmm. Also, it sounds like there's, like, an aircraft right next to you. What is that?
That is an aircraft. I live by an airport.
No, it's not.
It is.
No.
There's a helicopter right above my house.
It sounds like a vacuum mixed with, like, an aircraft. I don't know. Or there's, like, an F-18, you know, F-18 Hornet or something. Or, like, F-18 Hornet, like, right outside your window or something. That's really, really odd sounding.
It is. I'm right next to a window.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, there's all kinds of aircraft. That's the one thing I don't know if I never told you. I don't live right next to an airport, but I live close to it. And what? It's not like a big, like, metropolitan one. It's not like the Denver International Airport.
But, yeah, because, I mean, why have I only heard about this right now in the 5 years that I've known you?
Because our airport's insignificant, and we don't usually get traffic like this. Sometimes we do.
Who do you have, the president?
I don't know. We've had the president in our town before.
Okay.
We have. Obama's come, like, years back, but yeah, I don't know. I do live by an airport, and a lot of it is, like, weather fucking helicopters and, you know, police airplanes and that type of stuff.
Very curious.
Yeah. It's interesting, and right now I don't know what's going on, but I think it's fading away.
Yeah, well, we hope. I'm disappointed you haven't seen Guardians of the Galaxy. It's a pretty awesome freaking movie.
I know, I have not seen it, my friend.
Oh dear.
But I've a lot, like I said, a lot of exciting things have happened this week.
That's true. Well, what else has happened? So obviously you released two videos.
Mm-hmm.
And you got a laptop.
Yep, and then Final Fantasy XIV and The Last of Us.
Okay, so let's just jump right in. So The Last of Us, so how, without ruining it, how far did you get in it?
I got to where a certain... how can I say it?
You got to where Ellie is.
Yeah. Yes, I did.
Okay.
And a character makes a sacrifice.
Okay.
Is that the way to put it?
I guess. I could have made it a little bit more subtler, but, and that's the best you can do. So, I mean, okay, give me the 411 of this game. So, obviously, you're playing this about more than a year after its release. So, I think people are probably kind of curious as to what your thoughts of it are.
It's very interesting. The story's very interesting. Joel is pretty fleshed out. I like how it started 20 years before, you know, the shit goes down.
Right.
And the whole thing with his daughter and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I could start seeing parallels with him and Ellie.
Mm-hmm.
So the voice work. Okay, so I got to talk about the voice work for a second.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so his name escapes me at the time. The Joel's voice actor. I know it, but it escapes me.
Really?
Yeah.
You should know this by now.
I do. Troy Baker.
Yes.
Yes, Troy Baker. You know, years ago, I remember in TPPPG, you and I talked about, what's-his-face?
Nolan North?
Yeah, Nolan North. And at the time, he was the leading man in video games.
Mm-hmm.
Remember?
Yeah,
the leading voice actor.
Oh, totally.
And now, he's been kind of replaced. I mean, Nolan North still does a lot of, whatchamacallit, voice work.
Yeah.
But Troy Baker has taken that title over.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, Troy Baker has done, practically, Nolan North seemingly does, Western games, with a few exceptions. Troy Baker has done everything. Everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's the main character in Tales of Vesperia. That's the first time I've heard of Troy Baker.
Right.
Was Tales of Vesperia, you know, Kanji from Persona 4, fucking Two-Face.
Mm-hmm.
The Joker now, right?
In Origins, yes.
In Origins, and I believe there's rumors that it's Arkham Knight as well, but who knows?
Right.
Yeah, so, and I believe he plays the Joker in that movie that came out as well. There's a DC animated film called Assault on Arkham, and the Joker's in it.
Uh-huh.
So, there you go. So, Troy Baker's a very, very good actor, wouldn't you agree?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But continue, though. I want to hear your thoughts on the whole thing. Just give me the whole shebang.
Okay, so the whole shebang is this. Okay, so this is the team that did Uncharted 2, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so what's interesting about it is it has the... Okay, so I've always said Uncharted 3 didn't feel as refined
mm-hmm.
as Uncharted 2. Because they even made weird story choices. Like, Chloe could have been left out of that game.
Yeah.
Out of 3. But with The Last of Us, story-wise, it feels as concise as Uncharted, but there's a major difference. I think it's a deeper story, and I feel that the characters are more fleshed out a little bit more than Uncharted 2.
Okay.
I don't know if you would agree with me on that.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah. Obviously. But I don't want to interrupt you, though, because I know that you want to talk about this game. Just go, you know, take the floor. Take it. Here you go.
Take it. Okay. Here's the deal about this game. I really enjoy it. I can't make a final decision on it yet, of course, but I'm really liking it. I love the characters. The combat's very good. I like how you know, there's pieces where it feels very survival horror-ish. There's mm-hmm. there's flashes of Resident Evil 1, and I don't mean you must solve a puzzle, that type of shit. I mean more of when you would return to the mansion in the original game, mm-hmm. and there were hunters, and they would overpower you type of feel.
Mm, okay.
And it wasn't always brute force.
Right.
So I love that. I also love the fact that it reminds me of another one of my favorite horror games of the last few years. And you know what that is?
Which is?
Walking Dead.
Really?
Yeah, just the relationship between Ellie and Joel.
Okay.
You know. Some Lee and Clementine shit going on.
Well, yeah. That's definitely a common thread between this game and The Walking Dead, you know?
Yeah. Great games, though. Great. Both of them. Is it worthy of Game of the Year from last year to beat out my Game of the Year from last year? I don't know yet. I don't know yet. Tomb Raider didn't because it had one flaw, you know, I've told you before.
Mm-hmm.
And this one, I also like that. Another thing is if the game feels organic.
Okay.
I don't feel there's a lot of stuff tacked onto it, you know? And I've said this about Western games. I feel like games of God, like God of War is the guiltiest of this, is that they've always tacked on level up systems to make the game feel deeper when it didn't really have to. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this game, you know, doesn't have anything tacked on. All the mechanics smooth out well.
Okay.
So I like that. And it can be scary to play at moments.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Has it made you jump?
Not jump, just feel really intense, though.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of like, oh, you know, those fuckers, those guys are fucking scary as shit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Now, that particular group, I know the group's name, but I won't say it to spoil anyone. Or would it spoil people?
No, it wouldn't spoil people.
The Fireflies.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. It's got that Walking Dead vibe where sometimes the humans are scarier
mm-hmm.
than the actual monster surrounding you.
Right.
And then what are those cordyceps? I like the concept of that. And I'm glad they didn't make this straight on zombie because it might have been a little bit
mm-hmm.
repetitive. And with the cordyceps, as you can tell, they could do a lot more and they don't have to stick to a particular trope.
Mm-hmm.
So I like that as well.
That's kind of like one of the best parts in The Last of Us is that it's really kind of focused on, you know, on and engaging the player in a very immersive way. And I kind of agree with you when you said that you really liked the opportunity to actually see the world beyond, you know, like beyond like where the affection happens. Because the difference between The Walking Dead and The Last of Us is that The Last of Us, there are people who have been born whose only reality was this, you know, like the post-infection phase, which is something that, you know, The Walking Dead can't really talk about right now, especially cohesively, because if there's somebody that's born right now, well, it's going to take them a little bit more time in a few years for them to actually grow up and kind of, you know, acclimate themselves in this environment. And the one thing that I've always found interesting was that Ellie was born in this environment. She never knew civilization.
Because they did that 20-year time skip, whereas yeah. Walking Dead opens a few months and it's maybe a year or two into the outbreak.
Exactly.
So I think I like that too. I like the time skip. I like time skips when they're used effectively, you know? Tekken 3, if you recall.
Okay. You there?
Yes, don't worry. It was not my internet. I hit me on accident.
Okay, all right. That was weird.
Okay, so here's the deal on that. Tekken 3 did a time skip, remember? Between Tekken 2 and Tekken 3.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just kind of... But it's a Tekken game. Who cares?
Yeah.
So, but this game did it really well.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you really feel for Joel.
Yeah.
He's a very interesting character.
I mean, that part before the logo popped up, I mean, how did you feel when that happened? I mean, that probably, like, tore your heart apart.
It did. It did.
That scene that Troy Baker did, that whole scene, I was like, oh my god. Like, I was like, I literally, like, couldn't, you know, I mean... That was one of the most redeeming moments of that game, is that whole scene. Like, you know, and I can't imagine seeing him, like, in real life if he actually did that. Like, because this is all motion captured and acted, just like in Uncharted. And I can't imagine, like, if I fucking watched that scene in person, like, I would probably, like, friggin' break out and cry. Because that was probably one of the most... you know, heartbreaking moments like I've seen in a video game. Like, I was like, holy shit. I mean, I can't believe this.
It is. It's really, really tragic. I think, you know, the best video games that have stories to me have a poignancy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And this game seems to have that, you know, mm-hmm. and a really deep one, a really deep poignancy that is just that just touches at you. And the best video games I've always ranked in some ways, you know, with their stories. Like, there's a reason why Xenogears is my favorite game of all time.
Right.
Because
right.
it has that poignancy. And then, you know, I'll talk about another Western game that touched me a lot. And that was Red Dead Redemption.
Right.
And it has that sort of feel.
It does, right? Like, it's very kind of homely, you know, when you're kind of, like, with people who you're familiar with amidst, like, a world that's basically, like, foreign in a way, you know?
It did.
Yeah. So you talked about, you know, talked about the story. You talked about the story a lot in this game. Mm-hmm.
I was just going to say, can I talk about workbenches?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, I like the workbenches mechanics because... one of my complaints about Tomb Raider was I didn't feel a difference when I upgraded weapons.
Mm-hmm.
I did it anyway, unless it was something like a silencer put to the pistol or something like that.
Sure.
But I didn't. But this game, when I work with the workbenches, I feel just because of the cordyceps, what are those fucks called? I just said their name.
Cordyceps.
Earlier. Cordyceps, yeah. Because some of them are more powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Working on the workbench is effective. Now... I do like the fact that there you don't level up per se, but you do have to upgrade your weapons at the workbench, and that kind of, you know, it's kind of something you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I like that.
Yeah, and if you're playing it on hard mode, it's actually a lot more difficult, and every single upgrade counts.
Oh shit! Okay.
Yeah, I actually played The Last of Us on hard mode, and you know me, I never play anything on hard mode, and mm-hmm. and I tried it. And it's pretty hard. it's not a joke. It was very frustrating. It was very, you know, it's weird though, because it was, I guess, slightly more difficult than normal Uncharted 2, I would say. Because you know how in Uncharted 2, there's like enemies where they just don't die after one hit. You know, they just kept on, you know, I almost felt like, you know, like they were working towards, you know, this game. It's like, yeah, let's make characters that don't get shot after one hit. So yeah, I mean, the workbench stuff was really interesting. The crafting though on the fly and how it does not pause the screen, that was when I first realized that, I was like, oh damn.
Oh, yeah, maybe that's why I also like it, because it makes it feel organic as opposed to
you probably mean it makes it feel more real.
Yeah. Organic and real, mm-hmm. I would say. And I'm really digging this game. This of the ones that I've played so far, this is my favorite. And then, of course, I'll explore BioShock Infinite, which I did delete from my hard drive for the time being.
Oh, I understand. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know why, though.
Yeah. Does it feel like this game was made by the Uncharted 2 people?
It does. Like... I got to talk about Uncharted 2 and 3. I'm not knocking on 3. I like 3 a lot. I think it's a great game. Good game.
Mm-hmm.
Almost. Yeah, I guess it's a great game, but it's not,
okay.
It's not as spectacular as...
You're going back and forth on this, Anthony.
I have to, because that game didn't make me feel like I did when I played 2. And 2 is so good still. 2 is so good. What is it, 5 years later?
Mm-hmm.
You can revisit 2. I've beaten that game so many times. It's like my modern Mario Brothers.
Yeah.
It's so good. And then, and it has that feeling to it that I love so.
Mm-hmm.
That Last of Us does.
Yeah.
So, and Uncharted 3, I'll revisit you, and it has great moments, but, you know.
Yeah. Uncharted 2 is the one.
Now, mind you, real quick about Uncharted 4, are we getting the same team?
That's what I heard.
Okay.
But, you know, that being said, there's a lot of people that are leaving Naughty Dog.
Ah.
So that's like, that's the catch-22 right now. Is
like people leaving BioWare like we heard today?
Oh, God. Okay, yeah. We'll talk about that later.
Yeah. That was a pretty fucking big blow to
that's
BioWare.
That's a huge blow. But, yeah, so we'll talk about that immediately after this. Okay, so yeah, I mean, a lot of them are working on Uncharted 4. They're kind of hinting that Uncharted 4 might be it. One last adventure with Sully.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh no, really? Oh my god. You know, like everybody just kind of like you know, I remember watching that trailer at E3, and everybody just kind of had this, held their collective breath. They're like, what? This is the last Uncharted, you know, like, it's almost as if, like, they're saying, like, it's the last Uncharted, but they won't say either way, because, like, he was talking to Sully, and that's, like, the narration, right? And Sully's like, all right, sure, kid, and I'm like, what? You know, that was, like, you know, and it's great that people have so much investment in these characters, and the thing is with The Last of Us is that it's a different investment, you know, like, and because of the deliberate pacing of the game, and I'm not going to basically tell you what I thought of the game, because I want you to finish it, and then we can kind of detail our feelings of it. But you feel that the game has a very deliberately slow pace. And, you know, the whole, it's great because typically when you have a slow paced anything, there's some sort of the feeling of just the sluggishness, and, you know, like, it's like, oh, you want this to push forward already. The storyline, it almost mirrors the plight of the characters, you know, like, they want the solution to this plague or this epidemic to be found, but they're not moving, nobody is moving fast enough in order to discover this cure or to find a solution, you know?
Yeah.
Instead, people are content with their current situation, and it's, you know, it definitely touches on a lot of The Walking Dead's thematics, you know?
Yeah, it does. They're showing a society that's 20 years into it, as opposed to society that's a few months into it.
Right.
And I like that approach too. I really think The Last of Us is really one of those. And again, you know, I don't hate Western games, but I got critical of some of the stuff they've done. But this game's just badass.
Yeah.
It's really damn good.
So
you know?
Like the gunplay and the stealth and all that?
Oh yeah, it's really good. Really good. So. I don't want to say too much more because I want to talk to you more about it in future episodes. So.
Oh, okay. Because I was like, come on, say something. You haven't played this game. This was one of last year's games. I was like, yeah. So.
Well, I've said some stuff. So.
Okay.
Said some more stuff. So, and I like it. And we, you know, I think we had a good discussion. But I want to touch briefly on Tales of the Abyss because I'm going to do a review of that.
Okay.
I have to, because this game I have also been raving.
Okay.
To you, as you know. And I have to say, it may be my favorite Tales game.
Whoa. That's pretty high praise. Better than Vesperia, huh?
The story is just, like I said, the main protagonist was a bit unlikable at first, as I said weeks ago. Mm-hmm. But the stuff that he goes, some of the best character growth, not only, you know, like mechanically wise, but story wise.
Mm-hmm.
And just the plot twists and all of the antagonists, the six god generals, all of them have, each of them is synced up with a particular character in the main group, because there's six main characters, six villains, right? And they're all linked up to those characters in their backstory. So they're like a doppelganger.
Mm-hmm.
Which I love. I love it. And there was a couple plot twists that I told you, but I'm not going to mention out here because I want people to play them. But I thought you thought they were kind of cool too, huh?
Yeah, I think I thought they were pretty clever.
Yeah. Yeah, because they took some tropes from JRPGs and turned them on their heads, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
You know, particularly that character Jade. Remember, I told you his backstory.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we don't want to get into that, but was that?
I know it's such a difficult thing to talk about. Like, you know, it's difficult to talk about games, you know, and their spoilers. You know, like, I almost feel like we need to have a future episode where we do just talk about spoilers for a particular game.
Let's do it next week.
Well, for what?
I don't know.
I mean, don't say that and then be like, oh, wait, I didn't beat it yet.
I thought you meant spoilers for games.
Well, I mean, well, we can't just make it like, hey, if you listen to this episode and you don't play these games or you haven't finished these games, we're going to spoil all of them. I'm talking about like a game-specific spoiler episode, because I think that if we just make like a general spoiler episode, no one's going to listen to it.
Yeah.
I mean,
people don't skip pieces.
Well, no, they won't even skip the whole thing. They just not listen to the episode.
Oh, that's true. You know what? If I beat Tales of the Abyss, this week or the week after. I'll let you know for sure.
Okay.
We'll do a spoiler because I really got to talk about that game in depth. And it's something, you know, I know you're interested in clever twists and I know you want to hear about it. I know you won't play it because of, you know, time constraints.
Time commitments, basically.
Yeah. But I know you want to hear more about the story.
Yeah.
So, it's pretty damn cool. And I can even tell you why it's called Tales of the Abyss. Because there is a reason behind that.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the Tales games, it's like Tales of Vesperia, that's about the world. Tales of Symphonia, you know, that's about the world. This one actually has a thematic meaning to it in the story.
Oh, yeah. So, anyways, let's just cut that off. Because, I mean, we can't really talk about it until a future episode. So.
Oh, yeah. We'll leave it at that.
Yeah. So let's talk about the person who left BioWare today. Today, this was pretty crazy as far as news day.
Wait. You haven't played anything?
No. We'll move on. Let's talk about this first because this is pretty important. So today, Zynga actually announced that they signed Tiger Woods to their new sports line.
I heard about that.
Didn't you? Like, it's nuts, right? It's like, what? Zynga's doing sports? But that's not the craziest thing. The craziest thing is that Casey Hudson, the person responsible for Mass Effect and the new IP that BioWare is currently working on, it's in pre-production, just left the company today.
The new Mass Effect, right?
No.
Oh, no. That new game. I saw the trailer with the house in the hole and shit.
Basically looks like Heroes.
Yeah.
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 So he's gone. He just left the company today.
Yeah, I and he doesn't know if he's going to come back into video game.
Nope.
Yeah, that's... Here's the thing. Casey Hudson was sort of like their Sakaguchi.
Yeah, I mean, after the doctors left, I mean, nobody else was really, like, the figurehead for that company. And I'm sorry for, you know, for the guy responsible for Dragon Age Inquisition, who's been there, by the way, since the very beginning of Dragon Age. I mean, his name is Mike. I know that. I met him, and I feel really bad for not knowing his full name, because I haven't seen him in a long time.
Right.
But...
Nice guy?
And great guy. Like, he was like a total Dungeons & Dragons nerd. Like, he was fucking awesome. But Casey Hudson is the current figurehead of BioWare, and now that he's gone, there is none. And that's scary.
That is scary. It's kind of funny, because I was watching the credits of Baldur's Gate 2, because as you know, I'm going to hopefully be streaming it.
Yeah.
Hint, hint. Saturday, if you hear this before I stream, come to my stream.
Jeez, yeah.
In the credits, Casey Hudson's in it, but he's like a small part of that development.
Uh-huh.
And then in Neverwinter Nights, he's a bigger part. And then in Knights of the Old Republic, head honcho.
Mm-hmm.
Now, did he do Jade Empire?
I don't know his history, to be honest. All I know him from is Mass Effect.
He did Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic.
Okay.
He did direct that game, I believe. That, you know. And then, of course, the Mass Effect games, which, you know, despite the third one's some of its failings, I liked it.
Uh-huh.
So, I don't know. But, you know, like you and I have said, I don't know if it's because of what he said in that letter. He said basically it's because, you know, he wants to find out where he is, but have a suspicion that EA is part of it. Because that company's never been the same.
Well, BioWare, pretty much, right?
Yeah, BioWare's never been the same.
Mm-hmm.
Since EA bought them.
Yeah.
And
I can't really like posit as to why he left. I can tell you this though. I mean, regardless of the drama.
Okay.
I'll remind you of what Ken Levine said last year when he released BioShock Infinite, which is he basically, I can't quote him exactly, but he basically contextualize game development as a living, breathing thing, and that a lot of people kind of leave and then come back and then, you know, sometimes, you know, move on to bigger, better things. A lot of people did that for BioShock Infinite within its, you know, mm-hmm. like its development cycle. As a director, these guys have a huge responsibility for the creation of a world. And we're not talking about just like a Mario level or something like that, because, you know, we're talking about a whole universe, right?
Yep.
Because, not, you know, you could say that Bioshock Infinite was a linear game, but if you look at the context of the world that's created around that narrative, it's fully fleshed out, right?
Yeah, it's a very huge world.
It has its own history. It has its own like unique characters. It has its own president, lifestyle, way of life, you know, like motif, thematics, challenges. It's not enough for you to do that in a video game, you know, to just basically make the levels of a video game. You need to look at the bigger picture. I feel that Casey Hudson probably felt the same way, that, you know, the projects are just getting longer, and that he wants, you know, and when he probably realized that he has to work maybe 2 or 3 years on the same thing again, he probably like reevaluated it and said, you know what? I don't know if I want to keep working on this project for next year or 2 years.
Yeah, and some of those guys have they not gravitated towards smaller projects like Tim Schafer did?
Well, Tim Schafer is a different story, right? I mean, he that was a long time ago when he actually created Double Fine.
Yeah.
But if you want to talk about somebody like Jonathan Blow, who, you know, who basically like started off, you know, at his own, you know, basically by himself with an artist. I mean, it was the same kind of concept, is that he didn't want to be, he wanted to make games on his own pace. Still takes, you know, for a long time, mind you. But he wanted to be responsible for his own work. And when you're working with huge teams, the humanity and the vision sometimes gets lost, because now it's touched by several, you know, 100 different people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It always changes, especially over time. So it gets released. I almost feel like games, big budget games, get released when it feels right, when everything coalesces. But not everybody has to agree on the vision.
Exactly.
And that's when you lose and gain people.
You know, something like, I can imagine, like I mentioned earlier, Red Dead Redemption probably took hundreds of people to make.
Yeah, and a lot of people probably left the company, and some new people joined to take over and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I hope we hear about another Red Dead Redemption soon, though.
Well, Zelnick said it was a franchise. That's not something to worry about. But going back to this, he said that his work, like all the conceptual stuff about this new project, is done.
Okay.
So, and the way that he said it was that he's confident that the team working on it will deliver like a really truly amazing experience. So it looks like the groundwork is there, and he helped build it, you know? That said, I can totally empathize if the reason why he left is because he looked at the next several years and thought, oh fuck, I really don't want to do this.
Exactly.
You know? So.
Exactly. Yeah, that whatever project it is, it's going to be big in scope.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, if he's already afraid now, he's like, oh shit. I'm not saying that this is a bad thing, mind you. I'm just saying that, it, you know, the guy has a family, right? I mean, even Levine, who basically worked on 2 games the past 10 years, is probably saying, like, fuck, what did I use with my time?
Yeah.
You know, this is a question that a lot of video game developers have to face, because this isn't like the movie industry, like where in 2 years, boom, it's over, or you film it for like about maybe 6 to 9 months and it's done. You know, like there's definitely a post-production process and all that stuff, but at the very least, you're working on multiple projects. You're one studio working on multiple projects. In this case, you're one studio working on one project for the next 2 or 3 years.
Yep.
You see the same thing. So not only is the CG guy the same, but also the AI guy and all that stuff. It's daunting.
The AI guy might be one of the script writers.
Oh, yeah. Potentially, yeah.
Yeah. So I don't... It's crazy. This, you know, that's why I get frustrated. Look, I'm critical of certain things, right? Sure. But I'm only critical of the products themselves based on my personal taste at times.
I could... Yeah, I mean, I'm guilty of basically blaming the people, right? I mean, obviously.
Yeah.
But in the end, it is the game's fault. Like, it is basically how it turned out. Their vision might affect it, but, you know, but it's the game. you know, it's the product itself that's the issue. And kind of along the same lines, did you know that it's been about a year since Phil Fish quit the industry?
No, I did not. I heard about this.
Yeah, he quit last year and said and canceled Fez 2.
And I don't remember the reasons, but please elaborate for a second. Why?
He basically, I mean, I have the article on the Game Horizon website, which already shows you Anthony does not read the Game Horizon website.
Oh, I do. I just don't read, or I just hadn't read or older articles.
This is new. I wrote this 2 days ago.
Okay.
So you have no excuse.
Okay, go ahead.
Bottom line is he got into a spat with somebody on the internet, and this guy was kind of being a douchebag anyway. He basically, like, you know, criticized indie developers for being like hipsters, and you know, I don't really know the whole thing, right? But basically, okay. Yeah. And then later on, you know, Phil Fish showed up on his Twitter and declared Fez 2 over, and then he made his Twitter account private, and then he basically announced it on Polytron's website, much to the surprise of his business partners at Polytron.
Holy shit.
So we haven't heard anything from him except that on April 1st he said that Fez 2 is back, which is, of course, it's April 1st, so that didn't really happen.
Ah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is, so when he announced that he quit, instead of getting support, you know, from a lot of people encouraging him to come back, I basically, like, selected some choice quotes of people basically telling him to get the fuck out. He doesn't know anything about the industry. His game is shit, you know. And there's even one that was obviously trolling, saying like, yeah, there's not enough shooting, you piece of shit, like, go home, whatever.
What?
It was really bad.
Okay.
You guys should really read that article. It's called Nice Hat, Fez 2's Cancellation a Year Later.
Not enough shooting?
Yeah, it's on GamerHorizon.com. It's on our website. You should read it.
You know, I'll be honest, I'm not the biggest fan of the guy, and you've known this.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to look at it one way. I think now I will finally get to play Fez after 2 years because of PlayStation Plus, which is great, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't played it yet because I kind of was of the Vita games. I was kind of playing Dragon's Crown. So,
mm-hmm.
So there's that. But I finally get to play it and see what I think of it. I'm going in. I don't know how to feel about it because I'm, you know, indie games, I like them, but some of them I feel pretentious. Some of them aren't. You know, there's the great ones like Limbo and Journey and things like that, and Outlander that I love. But then, or Outland as it's called. And then there's ones I don't like whatchamacallit, Jonathan Blow's game.
Braid.
Braid, yes. Yes. You know, along with Ted, we're not fans of that game.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's interesting because you guys don't like the game because it was because of Jonathan Blow.
I just didn't, you know, it was more than that. I just didn't dig it. Everything about it felt pretentious, but, you know, we've gone over this before, though. But yeah. I don't know how to feel about Fez, so I'm going to try to go on with
those. I'm just kind of curious if you would still feel the same if you replayed through Braid. Because, I mean, because looking back at that game, outside of the scope of Jonathan, you know, Blow and stuff, like, not if he, you know, outside of what he did, I still feel that Braid is a fantastic game.
What do you mean what he did?
Well, outside of him actually having anything to do with the game.
Oh, okay.
If you just basically looked at the mechanics of the game, look at all the puzzle elements, the level design, and, you know, just the artwork, it doesn't, I mean, to me at least, it doesn't look pretentious. The artwork is definitely different, but nothing of it screams pretentious to me.
Okay.
So that's why I'm kind of curious as to what makes you think that it is pretentious.
Just everything about it. Like,
that's the thing. That's not an answer.
Well, I was going to break it down, though.
Okay.
Okay? Everything about it. Like even the mechanics feel like they're trying to figure out the character's name, Tim, if I remember correctly, right?
Yeah.
Okay. You're trying to figure out this whole thing with Tim, and the time mechanic is supposed to, you know, if you can go back and wipe out your mistakes and, you know, having regrets and all that. And even that's implemented in the mechanics. And then the whole little creatures are like, I don't know what to make of them, but they just seemed kind of artsy to me. And I could just go into why I don't like this game.
Wow.
In more depth. But, you know, we got other things to talk about.
Sure.
Now, if you want to talk about Braid, we could do an indie episode sometime down the line.
At some point. We'll revisit it. I think it's one of those games that I do plan on revisiting. Because it is, mechanically, it is a fantastic game. And and the artwork, I felt, was great. It's weird, but it is, you know, it is very evocative. And it is, you know, I feel that they put a lot more work into that game than most of the games that are pixel art. You know, because remember, like, you know, beyond Braid, there was, like, a huge influx of, like, indie games that was, like, fucking just pixel art, like trying to mimic the 8-bit style.
Yeah. Oh, there still is.
And there, and that just is getting fucking old. Like, I mean, yeah, it's just ridiculous.
It is. It is. I mean, there's those standout games that I enjoy, you know, that have that art, that look to it, but there's too many of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's just way too many. Even Capcom dabbled into that a bit.
Mm-hmm.
With Mega Man 8, you know, no, Mega Man 9 and 10. So, I don't know. I have to kind of agree with you that I am kind of tired of it. Why don't we see some nice, clean, like 16-bit style graphics?
Well, I mean, that's the bad part. People say, oh, this is 8-bit graphics. No, this is 16-bit. You have more than 5 colors, dude.
Yeah.
And okay, the audio that you have, definitely not 8-bit. Sorry.
It's one of those things, like, if you look back at the TurboGrafx 16-bit, you know, it claimed to be 16-bit, but from what I understand, it actually had a 8-bit processor in it.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's the indie chic, right? It's like, let's make something really retro. And that's why, you know, that's to me, like, why I like Fez and Braid, is because Braid didn't, like, aim to be just an indie game, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, I loved, like, it's the same way that I loved, you know, Limbo for its simplicity.
Limbo graphically is beautiful.
It's stylistic, but it's simple. If you strip out all the post-processing, it's a pretty simple game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but with Braid, like, you can tell that they didn't just put different elements of the world together without a reason. Like, everything is well thought out. I mean, it's not, a lot of it is, a lot of it is definitely something that they put a lot of thought into, which reminds me of Fez, because in Fez, nothing is, like what you're saying earlier about The Last of Us, nothing is extraneous about that game. Nothing is, it's not fatty. There's not things that you can just cut out and then the game would still function. No.
Yeah.
The same thing with Braid is, like, the artwork is the one that actually completes the whole feel of the game. Fez, everything in it completes the game. You know, like, even the hieroglyphics on the walls, that means something.
I need to play that one. Look, I also have to put my feelings for Phil Fish aside, because I think, I don't want to say what I think about the guy, because we don't bash people here.
Well, we try not to.
Well, we try not to. Although we didn't succeed with Peter Molyneux. But anyway, but we have our reasons for that. Grudges held for 2 years.
Yeah, I know. Jeez. but that's a game that I've been playing.
Yeah, Fez, you've been playing Fez. Now, what was that other Vita game other than Dragon's Crown that was released? I did download it.
I don't know. There's Metrico and Proteus.
Proteus was what I was thinking of.
Both of them came out.
Okay. I didn't play Metrico or download it. I will tonight. But what did you think of Proteus?
I haven't played those two.
Okay.
Honestly, I've only been playing 3 games, one of which is Final Fantasy. And then there's Fez.
Okay.
Which we can talk about now if you want. I mean, Fez, I've gotten farther in Fez than I did before.
You played it on the original 360 release, correct?
Not as extensively as I have now that I'm playing it on the Vita.
Okay, so that brings me to a question. Does it fit the Vita better than the 360?
That's an unfair question. The thing is, like, it feels, the fact that I can cross save it and cross, and you know, and it's cross by is perfect.
Okay.
Because this is one of those games. Because, okay, so if you remember Indie Game the Movie, One of the things that Phil Fish said when he was asked about Fez is that this is a game where you sit down and relax with. This is not something that you're supposed to be stressed out with. You're supposed to come kind of like, it's supposed to be a Zen-like experience.
Right.
If you play it that way, you'll get why he said that.
Okay.
It is very similar to playing Myst. If you remember how you played Myst, it's very relaxing. You're not rushing to one part of the world to another. You're kind of thinking, huh.
I don't know if I would say Myst was relaxing for me as a kid, because I would explore all the areas and then I would see like the back of the box and there was like forests, villages and shit.
Uh-huh.
And I would get pissed because I couldn't get there. And I was dumb or something, figure out the puzzles.
Okay, then probably not. But it's like, yeah. But as an adult,
yeah.
If you played Myst, you probably would approach it in a very kind of like calm way.
Okay.
Like, you're not going to be like, you're not going to get pissed off like because you couldn't get to those forests, which you could. You would get there eventually. But there's a lot of puzzle solving. This is a game about puzzle solving. It is partly a platformer, but it is a puzzle solving game. Not as complicated as Echochrome in terms of its spatial puzzle solving, but there are other things that you have to figure out. And the beauty of Fez doesn't come with the fact that there's just a lot thought out in the game, but there is a magic to it. If you actually just resist looking at game facts at all for this game and just playing through it from beginning to end to try to get 200%.
Okay.
This is one of those games where game facts will probably ruin the fun for you.
Because, I gotcha.
Because this is a game that is 100% about exploration, anthropology in some sense, and even cryptography in some ways. It is really different. And it's kind of nice being able to play it outside of the zeitgeist of, you know, of when it came out, like all the hype around it, and being right. able to just play it like it just, you know, got birthed into existence and there was no marketing surrounding it. You know what I mean?
Flashing back to when it was released, you and I did talk a lot about it in season one of Game of Horizon, remember? And part of that zeitgeist was, again, more, you know, Phil Fish is a very polarizing figure. And there was a lot of that surrounding that game. Mm-hmm. You know, he had made those comments about Japanese games.
Which, by the way, got misconstrued.
Yeah, yeah. So he made all those comments and stuff like that. And he made other comments, if I remember correctly, and people, he's just a polarizing figure. And
well, okay. So I also watched a movie called Indie Game Life After.
Oh, that's a sequel?
It is basically an anthology. So it's a collection of different snippets of what happened after the movie came out.
Mm-hmm.
It is on iTunes. You can rent it for, I want to say, like $6 or something.
Right.
It is a great movie. It is a follow-up of a lot of the things that happened to a lot of the people in the movie, as well as several other independent people. It talks about the Japanese thing, his Japanese comment. And also how many, many people basically like took their words and basically like cut and paste them, like Photoshop them in order to make them look bad. This is also including, by the way, the guys in Super Meat Boy, who basically swore away like Twitter and all that stuff.
I gotcha. Super Meat Boy.
Yeah. So it's really, really interesting, and I really recommend it to people.
I'll have to check it out. Speaking of video game movies, this is a nice way to segue into something. I got a question for you. Have you heard of this video game, the movie?
I watched it. It's terrible. Okay.
That's what I've heard.
It's awful.
I've heard it's bad.
It is basically like a bunch. Dave Perry, I think, and Cliff Bleszinski actually funded this movie. And nothing against the director, but this is basically a light retelling of the history of video games.
With a lot of celebrities.
Well, no, not a lot of celebrities. But the thing is, it is apologetic for video games in a way. It's like, oh, well, you know, video games aren't that bad. You know, here it is. Oh, by the way, there was this thing about violence and all that stuff, but everything is cool. It's like, it is very sugary saccharine You know, like it doesn't really, I think the reason why is because I think they're well aware that a lot of people who are part of the controversies, like Joe Lieberman, for example, are still alive. You know what I mean? And so they're very careful about that. But it's because of that, that it doesn't have a soul, I feel.
You when you do something on the history of something, you need to make it raw and look into the realities of it, right?
The harsh realities of it.
Yes. The harsh realities. There was a documentary. Now, mind you, there's been many documentaries, but I think it's the best. It was released on PBS. It's on Amazon Prime. If you have it, I would recommend it. It's on comic books. It was a PBS documentary that aired last year, last October.
Mm-hmm.
3 parts, 3 hours long. And what's great about it is they don't sugarcoat shit. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You know, they go into, you know, comic books had their hearings. They had their bullshit. You know, they're an older medium.
Yeah, they need to be, right? For that documentary to be relevant, you have to show the ugly side. And the thing is, they skimped on, you know, they talked about the video game crash in the 80s, which is fine, but they didn't really kind of dig into why it succeeded, right? Like, you know, I've read a lot more video game history books that kind of say, like, well, you know, and you know, they didn't talk about the Nintendo seal of approval, why it got affected. You know, it's like they kind of talked about why it sucked. Why video games sucked and died, but they never said like why Nintendo succeeded. They just said Nintendo succeeded because Mario came out. I'm like, no, Nintendo succeeded because they basically controlled what came out of their system, you know, to prevent copycats from happening, which is right now an issue with Android and iOS.
God, yes. I'm worried that here's my concern with that. When I saw like Bush's Baked Beans has a game app, and so does Chipotle. You know, it reminded me of when they were releasing, like, the dog food game, Purina dog food game on the Atari. God.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So it was like, what the
It fuck? Mirrors that really closely, right?
Yeah. The Kim Kardashian game.
Let's not talk about
that. Yeah, I was like, what the fuck? But yeah, I think when you do that, you need to be blunt about it. You know, there's a great book I read by Steve Kent. It's a little outdated. Well, it's really outdated because it ends at the introductions of PS2, Xbox, and GameCube.
Oh, geez. Yeah, I've read that one.
But it's such a raw book.
It is. And that's a great book. If you guys look for Steve Kent's name, it's
Ultimate History of Video Games.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That one's a really good book.
But it's thick as fuck.
Oh, yeah.
And what's great about it is, like, the Atari stuff, that's so raw. He talks about all the cocaine use and the drug use and how, you know, they would, like, basically stop developing games so they could go get high and have sex in hot tubs. And
well, there's also there's also parts that was omitted, and I actually found it in Steve Jobs' book when he actually worked at Atari.
He briefly touched on that part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how, like, you know, Steve Jobs have terrible BO and how he was asked, like, to work graveyard. It's pretty funny.
Yeah. I didn't know that they cut that piece out of the book.
No, they didn't cut that piece out of the book, but it's just saying, like, it was a lot more raw in the Steve Jobs biography.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
When he actually talked about his time at Atari, which is great. And I think Nolan Bushnell was talking about it that way, which is great. I mean, it's a weird segue. I did not know he worked at Atari. But yeah, so I cannot recommend Video Games the Movie. I was skeptical of the reviews, and then all of a sudden I watched it, and I'm like, it's weird because it goes back and forth too much. It's like, it's like, hey, here's all the video games that came out in the cornerstones. And then you start seeing things like skipped, like Mortal Kombat. I'm like, what? You know, like Mortal Kombat is important. And then they go back to the death of video games. And then to, you know, and then forward. And then back. And then forward. I'm like, dude, just do it chronologically, please.
You know who, again, I would... PBS, I will say, they make the best documentaries. They get the best people to make the best documentaries, you know?
Well, I feel that the indie game people, like, should make a video games documentary.
Don't get me wrong, that was a good one. But I think the two best documentaries I've seen is that one, and then, of course, I've talked millions of times about Bowling for Columbine.
Yeah, yeah.
Both of those are the best video game documentaries I saw. I remember the one that Jeff Keighley tried to do, and that was kind of the same shit.
The problem with Jeff Keighley stuff is, again, it's too commercialized, it's too PC. because he knows those people exist, and he has to kind of walk a really thin line because he has to be diplomatic in order to get more coverage. I don't envy his situation. He is in a very different position than everybody else.
Of all the video game journalists, he's kind of like that, like CNN, not CNN, but like that Larry King type.
I think he's not that hard hitting at all. I think he's just kind of
no, not hard hitting. Just I mean, in well knownness, he's not hard hitting at all. He's soft.
Sure. Yeah,
he's very biased.
I don't want to say he's biased. I think he's more, like I said, diplomatic.
Okay, I gotcha.
Again, like, he has a career and all that stuff. It's very, I mean, even his Final Hours, projects, they're very commercial. They're very produced. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Now, Jim Sterling, on the other hand.
Well, you know, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, okay, so anything else you got to say about that?
So, anyways, Rogue Legacy.
Oh, let's talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about
Rogue Legacy. What do you want to know about it?
Okay, so I got to know that we were in our little group chat, the Hangouts, and Ted was saying that he wanted to platinum it. Is it hard to platinum, do you think?
It's a pretty challenging game.
Okay.
Because the difficulty ramps up quite dramatically in the middle of the game. And the middle of the game is very subjective, because what happens is if you die, the entire castle resets, and it's remade. So in other words, it's as if the game developer, and I talked to him last year at IndieCade, Terry Song, great, I think that's his name. I want to check first, because I have a co-worker named Terry Song also. I want to make sure that
we don't want you in trouble, bud.
Yeah, well, I want to make sure that it's the right person. Teddy Lee, I'm sorry. Kenny and Teddy Lee. It's as if they said, let's make our own Castlevania game. And they did. And successfully, actually.
What's his face left, right?
What's that?
What's his face left, Konami?
Who?
The Castlevania guy.
Igarashi?
Yeah, Igarashi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's not the reason why they made this. They just basically said, well, I like Castlevania, so then we decided to make like a game that was kind of like Castlevania, but we can just make the castle however we want it to.
Okay, okay. And now, the castle itself, I'm curious.
Okay.
Is it like a horror-themed game, or what kind of
theme? It's Castlevania. What else is there's skulls, there's like armors that are walking around, there are ghosts with just skulls flying around, there's little like hooded figures shooting fireballs.
Medusa heads?
No, there's no Medusa heads, but they're very careful in picking what elements to put in here. Then the reason why I say that is because everything is randomly generated. From enemy placements to the room placements and where each of the zones are. There are four different kinds of zones with four different kinds of bosses.
Gotcha.
And there's a last boss that you can face once you defeat all four bosses and unlock the main door, the last boss door at the beginning.
Okay.
But the catch is every time you die, the castle resets, but the boss is always defeated. Now you take back the money that you got from the castle when you get in, and then you can invest it on your character development, your character building. So you can buy extra health, better power, class upgrades. There are different classes. So there are shinobi, which are kind of like fast-moving characters. There are miners, who basically suck in stats but can get more money. There are barbarians, who are just like tanks. They cannot be, knocked back whatsoever. There are spellcasters, there are lich kings, that can siphon health. There's actually a huge amount of depth to the game, and it's all controlled by picking which offspring you want to play as. And each offspring has ridiculous, and I've talked about this before, each offspring have different ridiculous traits. For example, one offspring could be colorblind, so everything could appear black and white. Another offspring could be nearsighted, so everything around him, like away from him, is blurry. Or somebody has IBS, which is irritable bowel syndrome, and he could basically fart too much.
I heard you also could get attention deficit hyperactivity disorder.
Yeah, you can get ADHD, so you move super fast.
And it's a bit too much, too fast.
Yeah, but it's great. Definitely has its own character, definitely has its own humor. It has very... It has very slapsticky humor where there, like, for example, there's this kind of guy who, you know, kind of tells you like, hey, you know, for like about a third of your money, you know, I'll let you pick one of these three chests. And if you pick the right chest, I'll double your money. And then when you actually lose, he says like something like, you know, you lose. You suck, you die, you know, kind of like almost like that that one stereotype in like movies and stuff. You go now, you're terrible, you pick nothing, you win nothing, you know, which is hilarious. And that's just a few things that I like about the game. I mean, it is as if you are playing Alucard, but of course you know, like, you have items that you can buy, runes to equip. It is a really deep game, and I'm actually really happy that I bought it. It's my addiction outside of Final Fantasy.
I gotcha, which is becoming mine too. But we'll talk about that in a second because I got a couple more questions.
Sure, for you. Sure.
Okay, so what is? Maybe I shouldn't ask it. I was going to ask what the final boss was.
I don't know.
You don't know?
I haven't even beat the second boss yet.
What is the first?
I'm already at level. Every time you die, you increase in level. I'm already at level 62, and I've yet to beat the second boss.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. And it's a rogue light, in a way, because in order to get back into the castle, you have to give all your money to Charon, which is the god of death, or whatever.
To cross the river.
Yeah, pretty much.
God damn. God damn it, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let me ask you another question too. The shopkeep, how does that work? Is it like
you have to actually buy that as a character upgrade? So you need to actually unlock it by buying him. There are actually three
you
different.
You buy the shopkeep?
Yeah, because default he doesn't show up.
Hmm.
So it's kind of like, you know, the way that it's built, it's kind of like you're building your own castle outside the other castle. So obviously, you know, you buy the blacksmith, you know, you unlock him using money, and you buy the some sort of fortune teller looking person, and then an architect who basically says, hey, if you want to use the same map as before, you have to basically, like, you know, tell me, but you'll only get 60% of the money that you'll normally get.
Oh, shit.
So there's, like, you know, different kind of sacrifices like that. But, yeah, I mean, it's really interesting. Everything in that game has character. Like, even though you're dying in that game, you feel like you're getting more powerful. It's almost like Infinity Blade. You know, like, every time you die, you can always improve your character. Or, it's very similar.
Or Dead Rising.
Maybe. I don't play that series.
Yeah, Dead Rising had that feel. So...
Mm-hmm.
There you go. But I'll have to check it out.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, is there anything else? I wanted to ask you one more thing. Now, is you being a descendant, is that as ludicrous as Infinity Blade?
Oh, yeah. I mean, like I said, like, you know, you have hereditary, you have ridiculous like traits. Like, for example, you could be gay or lesbian. And then all the next characters would be all men or women. I mean, it's all comedy, right? Like, they know
gay
that this
and lesbian. What?
Yeah, well, that's one of the traits.
Okay.
So, like, you know, like, if you're a guy, you love the men, and then the women, you love the ladies, or something like that. It's funny. A lot of these traits are funny.
Okay.
And really, like, it's a lot more meaningful, I would say, than Infinity Blade, where it's just a different skin each time. You know, like, because these, you know, they randomly generate different traits depending on who you pick and all that stuff. It's really interesting.
Infinity Blade was pretty ludicrous on it.
Well, yeah, but I think this takes that ridiculousness to a whole new level.
Okay.
Because you can pick from one of three different offsprings, basically.
Because Infinity Blade was all serious.
Yeah, but this one is obviously not trying to be.
Yeah. Yeah. I think maybe that's why I can take maybe Rogue's Legacies a little bit more than Infinity Blade, because it tried to have a straight face.
You know what? And this is going to sound funny. I only need Rogue Legacy. I don't need any other... I mean, obviously, I'll play through Symphony of the Night, but I don't need any more Metroidvanias after this.
Ah.
Because it's randomly generated each time. It's a new challenge each time. Each platforming challenge is new. That's nuts.
That's a cool concept.
Yeah.
I like that. I'll have to check this out.
Yeah. It's really good.
Cool. So, shall we?
Yeah, this is big. So, you joined Final Fantasy 14 today.
I joined it last night.
Okay.
I created my character, and then I saw the opening cutscene where you're in the little cart.
Mm-hmm.
And the dude is drinking that merchant, that elf merchant motherfucker.
Yeah.
And then you go in, and then I registered at the Adventurers Guild, and then she gave me the three quests.
Uh-huh.
And off I went.
Yep.
And I completed those, and I'm digging it. Now, let me tell you this. When I got into MMOs, the first ones I played were Ultima, EverQuest.
I mean, but not heavily.
Well, I'm going to tell you about what my concern with this game is, okay? It's not a flaw with the game itself, it's a flaw with me. Well, not a flaw, but something I'm worried that's going to happen, okay?
Sure.
And Asheron's Call. Now, of all those three, I spent the most time on Asheron's Call, but that game is so fucking broken that even at the time I created a character, they're like, remake your character. I'm like, why? Because there was a class and race that worked, and all the other classes were underpowered.
Is that your concern about this game?
No. My concern with it is that with all three of those games, and then moving on to World of Warcraft and even DC Universe Online, that I'll get to like level 22 or something, and then I get bored.
See, that's why we're so, like, you know, me, Ted, and Ari are so adamant about you continuing the main story.
Yeah.
That is the most important. If there is anything that you need to mind in this game, it is the main story. If you do not do the main story, why the fuck are you playing this game?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, right now, what I did was the early quest was I did the tutorial quests in Gridania.
Yeah.
And you told me I have to go visit that lady in the Adventurers Guild when I hit level 4.
Well, the thing is, did you turn in that quest? Because to her? Because, like, what'll happen is, like, as soon as you turn in the quest to her, she'll give you another quest. And then, I don't remember exactly the order, but she'll give you another quest, but you'll see that there's a key right next to the quest marker, and the quest marker is red, which usually means that it's locked until a specific level.
She hasn't given that to me. However, I did see that in the Lancer's Guild, because I did the main Lancer's quest, and he had one that was red.
Yeah.
Now, maybe I didn't pay attention, but I am level 5, so I could go back and see if she'll give me it.
Oh, yeah, I'm pretty sure she will, because I can guarantee you, as soon as you turned in that quest, she, like, that icon would have turned red. Like, she still would have had the quest icon above her head, because you can tell the main story quest by having the meteor border around it. And you should always, always have at least one main story quest on you at all times.
Okay. Well, here's my thing about the game, though. The one thing that none of those games, including the big old World of Warcraft and even DC Universe, did do is that their NPCs only served the purpose of either giving quests or selling you crap.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
That's it. That is it. And in this game, I was talking to NPCs like I was playing I've been playing Tales of the Abyss or any other JRPG.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, when you play those games, you talk to NPCs, and they're like, yay, I like this town, blah, blah, blah. You know, maybe not necessarily that cheese ball, but you know what I mean. They bring the world to life.
Uh-huh.
And that what I absolutely fell in love with Final Fantasy XIV. Every NPC came alive.
Wow.
And, yeah. And another thing I liked, too, was I did this little quest where I decided to do some hunting stuff just for a bit to get my level a little high, because I'm a bit of a grinder, but I am going to go do main quest, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I wandered upon this encampment, not far from encampment, from Gridania.
Mm-hmm.
And this lady tells me, well, you know, my three students went missing.
Mm-hmm.
I hope you don't bring me any messages about beasts and such.
Mm-hmm.
And you go around and you look the area. And what's cool is like one fell asleep, one daydreamed, and one was meditating.
Mm-hmm.
You know, did you do that?
I think so. Yeah. I think I did.
Yeah. Okay. And what's cool about it is it's got that cool, quirky Japanese sense of humor
mm-hmm.
right there. And it's got that cool, you know, like we're not just, you know, sending you to do quests. Like in World of Warcraft and Ashran's Call, it's like, make sure you kill it, clear out that cave of mm-hmm. the orcs because we need it clear.
But there's But it's also might be the presentation. Ari and I talked about this last Friday. And in World of Warcraft, you get this window with a wall of text. Like it's not a dialogue box. You know, it's just a wall of text.
Oh shit!
You remember that? Like when you do that, it's like wall of text, accept.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all I did is just wall of text, accept. And even I even did like the whole quick display thing, so it wouldn't scroll like as if it was writing something. I'm like, I don't give a shit. Fucking give me the quest. But in Final Fantasy, there is dialogue.
Yeah,
and there are tons of dialogue.
Yeah, and I love it. And each. When you read each character, every NPC,
which is
amazing because it's fucking crazy. Like one of the early quests I did was I went to the marketplace
mm-hmm.
and I met the marketplace master in Gridania.
Yeah.
And I did the quest where you have to meet with him, you know, that tutorial story quest. And then I did another quest for him.
Mm-hmm.
And you go talk to the stalls, and the stalls, they're not particularly big fans of this guy. They call him a bastard and shit.
Yeah, yeah.
So it doesn't feel dead. Like, that was one of my main concerns with Destiny. You know, I know totally different game, but still online has a mass MMO feel.
Mm-hmm.
While the story seems interesting, and I'm still going to get Destiny, the problem that I felt was the tower was just lifeless
uh-huh.
and staticky. And even you felt that to a degree, huh?
Yeah, I mean, now that you mention it, like, going to, like, it's kind of like how you describe WoW. Every single shopkeeper's purpose is to sell you shit. There really isn't anything else that they are there for, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, and later on, even then, like, you know, you'll meet shopkeepers and stuff, and some of them will have quests, some of them won't. But for the most part, you know, like, it gives you an idea that even though not everybody in the world will have this sort of that you'll have some sort of interaction like this in anywhere else in the world, it gives you an idea that, by the way, this town is alive.
Yeah, exactly. Like, in the Adventurers Guild, there's a group of four adventurers sitting there in mm-hmm. in a table. And I went and talked to them, and each of them were like, they're part of the same team, but they even had their personality, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I went back and what are the little guys called? Lalafell. Yeah. I talked to the little guy at the table, the Lalafell, and he's like, well, I was eating fucking acorns or some shit or nuts. And he said that he ate a metallic one and he needs you to do a favor for him.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, again, it doesn't feel like generic quests. It feels like you kind of give a shit.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like that later on, some of these characters will give you even more quests and they flesh them out even further, which I hope.
But, yeah, you will. Do you think you're getting inundated with too many quests, do you feel?
At first I did, but I think right now, it's, you know, maybe it's because I'm more mature, I prioritize.
Uh-huh.
Just gotta prioritize, I think, is the key of it.
Okay.
So...
Like I told you don't need to take any quest if it you know, it shows what the level of the quests are.
Yeah.
If the level of the quest is below your current one, don't take it. You don't need to.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now another thing that's interesting, I had to talk about it from another experience, was after I played it, my 8-year-old played it.
Mm-hmm.
And he went a completely different path. He went the elf race.
Uh-huh.
And he played a gladiator because he wanted a sword. You know.
Okay.
You know, he kept asking me, it was funny because he kept asking me, because it's the Final Fantasy name, can I play Lightning? Can I play as Lightning? Can I play as Cloud?
No, but like in about maybe a month, or no, in a few weeks, I think Lightning might show up in the game.
Really?
You didn't hear about this.
No.
It's a cross promotion for Dragon Quest X, Final Fantasy XI, and Lightning Returns Final Fantasy XIII. So there are specific public events that will basically revolve around those three games.
Well, I'll send him Lightning's way then. So,
because yeah. I think for Lightning Returns last year, I think they did the same thing. And, well, this is for last year. And what they did was that Lightning basically showed up, and then you could actually win his win her outfit and her hairstyle.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. So with that, he was like, well, he's not playing as a female character, obviously. But he was asking if he could play as these Final Fantasy characters. I'm like, no, you can't, you know? And he's like, I'll just take a sword. So he chose Gladiator.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw the city he started in, and completely different than Gridania.
Yep.
Now, what's interesting about this is, another thing that I noticed is that he's already done quests. So it's not a hard game to pick up. If an 8-year-old can pick it up and understand it,
mm-hmm.
not that bad. He figured out how to work the journal. He was at level 3.
Okay.
But mind you, he's an 8-year-old, so he was a little concerned with killing things a little bit more than I was.
Uh-huh.
But I think it's a satisfying game. And he even got like 4 friend requests.
Wow.
More than I did. The only friend request I got was from Ari.
Oh, jeez. That's funny shit.
So I don't know what the hell he was doing in that game.
I know, right?
I think he was playing with the emotes a lot more than I was.
Yeah, it's a very emote-friendly game. It is a game that you should abuse emotes in.
Yeah, yeah. So, am I liking it so far? Yes. I'm glad they have I think another thing that sold me is the cutscene presentation.
Yeah, they're pretty well, like that beginning cutscene where there's the narrator and he's introducing you to Gridania. I mean, that was pretty fucking awesome.
That is pretty awesome. The big like CG cutscene.
Well, there's that too.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you know this, but the first half of that was actually the ending of Final Fantasy 14.
Yeah, you told me, with the Bahamut coming from the moon and shit.
Yeah, and then when everybody gets teleported, that's the last part that people saw in Final Fantasy 14.
So they
didn't see the second half until maybe last year.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. Here's the thing about that. The thing about this game is that, again, I'm not a fan of MMOs, but it's very easy to play. I think mechanically wise, it's not hard to get into. You know, I did hear you guys talk about that. Ted was saying that he's still learning mechanics, though, and he's way ahead of me.
Yeah, they teach mechanics all the way up to 50.
But right now, I mean, you know, I'm having a blast with it. Only thing is, there's one quest I kind of want to do, but I can't figure it out. This person wants me to bring him a bow. I tried to join the Archer's Guild. I cannot because I'm, you know, under level.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know where to get a bow at.
Okay. I think that's, that might be either a thing that you should buy in the marketplace, or it is something that you need to get from somebody.
And you know what? I'll be honest. Other than that quest, I have not ventured much into the marketplace. Actually, remember how I told you I visit in an encampment?
Mm-hmm.
There's a merchant in there, and I bought my first armors and weapons from him.
Mm-hmm.
There, it just felt a little bit more easy for me to buy equipment there as opposed to what it was, you know, in the marketplace. Felt a little overwhelming for me.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. So do you still go to Gridania?
Oh, yeah. The thing is with this game that's really cool is that they built the game so that you will still go to all of the capitals.
Gotcha, I gotcha. Now, the city my son's in, will I visit it? Do you know, it's like
You will have to.
What's the name of it?
Ulda. Ulda,
U-L-D-A-H. And he said it's cooler looking than my city.
Oh, Jesus. There's different classes available for each of the cities, so.
Yeah, yeah. And he was immediately like, you know what he made me do too? I forgot to tell you with his character.
Uh-huh.
He said, try to make him look like Sephiroth as close as I can.
Oh, geez.
So you know what I ended up doing? I ended up getting like a cut that's kind of like the Sephiroth cut, but not as long for him, and gave him white hair.
Yeah.
And then I gave him the eyes and everything.
Yep.
And then he fucked it up. He put like fucking scars all over him.
Oh, geez.
So he doesn't look like Sephiroth.
Great. Yeah.
So I'm liking it. I really am. I'm glad you talked me into it. I am skeptical of these type of games. It feels to me right now, it feels more like a JRPG with a lot of other people playing at the same time.
It's a multiplayer Final Fantasy game. It's pretty much what we all wanted growing up. Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm digging it.
And you're probably already seeing like chocobos and, you know, like Magitek armor. You're probably seeing a lot of that shit like when you're questing earlier too.
Yeah, I've seen chocobos. I saw a guy that runs a chocobo camp. I only got annoyed once in the game.
Uh-huh.
I think I told you earlier I was doing some of the monster hunt stuff.
Uh huh. Like the hunting log.
Yeah, the hunting log, and this group of people, it just got crowded. And I would attack a monster, and they were killing my monsters.
Was it during a fate?
I don't know. I was just killing, and they were just killing my monster. Didn't say anything about a fate. My son got involved in the fate.
Okay.
He's done more in the game, but he's going all over the place. I'm kind of a more disciplined gamer.
Okay.
So I'm kind of doing, you know, certain aspects, you know? Yeah.
If there is a fate, and it is your level and below, you should probably do it.
Okay.
Because that's free experience.
Okay, I gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know. There was no fate. Because when I saw him doing the fate, it informed him that there was a fate.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And as for me, it was just another group. And I would, like, target this fungus, and I was about to hit him, and they would steal my fucking monsters. They were using, like, arrows.
Oh, archers.
And,
okay.
Yeah, and it seemed like they were doing it on purpose.
Nah, I don't think so.
So I don't know. No, it was weird because every monster I'd try to attack, they were taking, but then they disappeared. So
yeah, they're probably doing a fate or something, and it just you didn't trigger it at the border of the fate, because there's like you'll see like a little blue kind of area, like a boundary, and if you're within it, you're in the fate.
It's great though. I like it otherwise.
Yeah,
I think it's pretty easy to learn, you know. It's, you know, if an 8-year-old can figure it out, you can too. It's totally not, it doesn't have a clunky interface.
I think when it'll matter is when you start being social, because the game does force you to party up with people later.
Okay, yeah.
That's when it's going to be tricky.
I'll probably stick with you guys.
Well, yeah, I mean, we're outside of it, but we can definitely help you out.
Yeah, because I don't know.
Like right now, there's four of us, right? I mean, there's me, you, there's Ari, and then there's Ted. We can always run you through a dungeon. But the thing is, you in the event that we're not with you, you could still group up with other people. But my concern is your child. I'm not concerned about you, but you're talking about an 8-year-old interacting with other adults and teenagers.
Yeah, yeah.
That's where he is going to find out that, you know, that's where it's going to be a little bit more challenging with him, because he has to converse with people and actually interact with them.
Okay. Well, he seems to be doing a better job of it than me. He got 4 friend requests. I only got one.
Sure. I mean, yeah. I guess so.
I only got one, so I guess he... Because I was like, this person, friend. And all I saw him doing was people were just standing around and watching doing him do emotes and shit.
Jesus, that's funny.
And they seemed to be amused by it, and I'm like, okay.
Yeah. That's hilarious.
So it's a solid game. I like it.
Good.
So,
and I can't wait until I actually join you there tonight.
Yeah, hopefully. Well, there might be a chance. Well, there might be a chance because Lid's giving me a hard time, and what I mean is I'm editing Lid off the box, and I need to get this third episode out.
Darn it. Well, I mean, I'm not going to be on until late tonight.
So, yeah, if I'm on, it might be early. We might miss each other. If worse comes to worse, there's always tomorrow.
Well, just do Lid right now, and then you know, like join in later.
Yeah.
I think you should do just that.
Yeah. Like,
let your kid play, because it's early anyway. You know, you do your Lid editing, and then tonight, you know, when it's all done and your kid's asleep, you can be like, all right, my turn. Yep, right.
My turn. So I was going to ask you, anything else you want to talk about tonight?
I think that's pretty much it. I think we covered, like, a lot of different things. So, that being said, you know, like I tell people all the freaking time, be sure to visit us at GamerHorizon.com, subscribe to Social Link Podcast on iTunes, and of course, you know, we have an RSS feed on our website as well. Also, follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/GamerHorizon, and of course on Facebook at facebook.com/GamerHorizon. And also, one of the things, too, that's really important, backlogbattle_Alex is my username on Twitch, and Anthony is going to stream pretty soon. It is backlogbattle_Anthony, so...
It's Baldur's Gate 2.
Yes, that's going to be fun. I can't wait.
It's going to be cool, because it's not like what everyone else is doing.
I think
it's...
so it's old school.
Absolutely. So, all right. So until next week, we'll see you guys later.